And I was like, I can't not. Like, I love this place. And so from that moment on, I think my mindset changed in Etta, because I think at that point I felt suffocated by the business. And from that point, I chose to be here. Not that I didn't feel like I had to be here. I wanted to be here. And then from that point in time, I just feel like everything has changed.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. In the last few years, front of house teams became non-existent in many instances as venues reverted to takeaway. Professionals lost their jobs or were forced into roles they were not ordinarily doing, like packing takeaway containers or delivering food. But the art of great hospitality has not been lost. Is there now a greater appreciation for the art of great hospitality? Hannah Green is the owner of Etta in Melbourne. Hannah, how are you?
I'm good. It's nice to be here.
It's good to have you on the show. You're regarded as one of the very best in the country when it comes to the art of hospitality. Do you feel that there's a greater appreciation after the last couple of years?
I think the sense of sitting in a dining room and the whole experience is appreciated now more than ever. And I think that's why we're seeing our restaurants and cafes and everything bounce back as strongly as we have, particularly here in Melbourne.
Given the sort of impact and the changes that everyone had to make, is there a change in the way you approach that front of house hospitality after the last couple of years?
I think I definitely, like the way I manage things myself, I definitely don't stress the small things as much anymore, but I don't think so. Like, I would like to say yes, but I feel like it's what we've been doing since day dot. I think I'm more appreciative of the fact that people, particularly here in Melbourne, have been through a time, like we're a state kind of going through some kind of like trauma or grief or whatever. So when we do see people, we don't necessarily, they may not be the same versions that we saw prior to that. And having these moments out are more meaningful than ever, I think. So I think it's patience on some levels, but also empathy on other levels.
How has it felt for you having sort of bustling restaurant dining spaces now and sort of that energy sort of reignited?
I am so tired. Like, particularly the last 18 months, we didn't stop. So everybody's like, oh my goodness, it must be so good to be open again. But we literally were so busy during lockdowns, where now I think that, and I would say I'm maybe whether you believe me or not, I think I've become more of an introverted extrovert. So being on the floor and giving that time and giving that same level of myself to staff and customers and all of that has taken a big toll on me personally. So it's just learning to rebalance that and put my new boundaries into place, I think.
Tell us a little bit about that. How have you managed this new balance that you've been trying to work out?
I mean, I'm still trying. I don't know if I've figured it out yet. But, I mean, even after this chat we're having, like I have a treatment with a myotherapist every week and then do clinical Pilates, and that's my time. Nobody can touch me. And generally on a Tuesday, it's like my busiest day of the week. I'll walk out and there's probably 10 messages of phone calls or whatever that there is, but that's kind of my time and that's how I start the week. And it just puts me into a headspace of like, okay, cool, I'm on. So that's just one small thing.
Do you feel that's one of the positives to come from this experience, that sort of notion of work-life balance that perhaps wasn't being addressed in hospitality?
100%. And I mean, have I achieved that both within myself and within my team at the moment? Probably not, but we strive for it every day. And I mean, even this week, I haven't even announced it publicly yet, but we are closing on Sundays, which is the first time we have ever done that in the history of Etta.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've been really lucky that, like, our level of trade has not decreased since we reopened. Like, if anything, it's just getting busier. And so it's when you're asking, and plus, I mean, we've still got COVID. We've got COVID ripping through the place at the moment. If it's not COVID, we've got the flu going through the place at the moment. And we're going into the winter months and masks are off. And so it is going to be very much a, I think it's still going to be a bumpy ride this winter. And I mean, we did only trade, well, we traded 6 days a week. But just taking that Sunday lunch off, the teams know that they're going to have 2 days off every week. It just changes things. And even in my own mindset, we've still got a day on the weekends to spend with family and things like that. And then we've got, you know, a Monday off to do our own things. But while we're in this state of having, you know, last Saturday night I had five floor staff out of action. Like, that's an entire team. So, I mean, I called in every single favour I had owing to me.
What you've created there with Etta is quite extraordinary, and I want to go into that a bit later, but take us back to when you were young. What sort of role did food play in your family?
Well, I grew up on a beef farm. Without realising it, I probably hated it as a child because it used to, I mean, we had to work on our weekends and that kind of thing. But as an adult, I look back on it as, you know, how lucky I was to grow up that way. And, you know, even from, I still remember not eating mandarins from the supermarket when we went to the supermarket. Like, it was, I think it was called Bilo. But I would eat mandarins off our tree because that would be, they would taste like mandarins, where the ones in the supermarket would not taste like mandarins that I had known. And, like, same as kind of steak. I was really spoiled of having, you know, this incredibly beautifully raised grass-fed Black Angus. That was just what we ate. We wouldn't eat sausages. We'd have steak. So I think from, like, an early age, that without even realising, it affected me. It affected me, and I used to think I was a fussy eater, but it was more, I could tell the difference between things, if that makes sense.
Well, when were the first inklings that you might sort of have a career in hospitality?
So when, I mean, oh, my God, there's a few little moments. When I was 15 and 9 months, we moved into town, and our next-door neighbours were chefs at the local pub, and I got a job washing dishes there. And I just really enjoyed the kitchen environment. And I mean, not that I really had a desire to be in the kitchen, if that, I really love cooking myself. But I just kind of fell into it. And so from there, I took a year off and I moved to Perth and got a traineeship at a pub over there that had a salad bar. The Kingsley Tavern, and then went to Broome for a season, and then decided to move to Melbourne and worked somewhere that is, you know, not great originally, and then basically just hounded Jade Nong when I was 19, and 312 had just won Best New Restaurant, and the rest is kind of history. Everything came from that place. My love of what I do now came probably, or the passion that I have now and the drive, I would say, came from that building.
312 was so influential, and a lot of people came out of that venue and have done amazing things. Do you have any stories from that time and the sort of impact it had on you?
Well, it's so funny because Ben Sears is actually, he's just moved to Melbourne and he's just helping us out here at the moment. So we are regaling stories at the moment of our time, and I don't know if I could say some of them online or where people can hear them. But, I mean, I think a really fundamental moment that has stuck with me, and I don't know if I've even told Andrew that, ever told Andrew this, but there was... Honestly, I don't even know how I kept a job there. Like, I was 19. I think one of the questions I was asked by Jaden, what are the two grape varieties of Burgundy? And I was like, Sauvignon Blanc? I had no idea. I had no idea. And I thought I was, like, going to be a food runner, but I ended up being in a section. They were so incredibly patient with me. And I may have or may not have sent the restaurant down a few times. But there was this moment, and it was when we only did tasting, when tasting menus were still a pretty new thing, and we would only do them on Friday and Saturday nights. And there was this table who were up to dessert, and me as a young waiter going through the motions of, like, what I've got to do next, I was ready for dessert. And he was like, I've stopped dessert. Can you see they've still got some Chateau Neuf du Pape? And he sent them out a little bit of Comté. They didn't order it. He sent them out a piece of cheese to go with the, while they finished their wine. And it was, it's still that moment where you stop and think about, and I talk to staff about it now, still to this day, where it's like, okay, we've got, this is our sequence of service. These are the things that we've got to do, but, like, where are they up to? Like, what is that table doing? What, you know, not that you're saying, what are they talking about, but, like, where are they at within themselves? What can we do to make it better for them?
You also worked with Andrew McConnell with Cumulus as well. Tell us about that period of time, and it sort of spawned a whole range of amazing venues that you worked at as well. Take us back to that time.
I mean, Cumulus was a game changer for Melbourne. Like, it was really... I mean, it was doing breakfast, lunch and dinner, like, and I don't think they were even ready for what was to come from that place. And it definitely, if you were to talk about doing that again now, I physically don't think I probably could do it. But we were all this, like, super, like, Josh Murphy was the head chef. Anna Sutherland was the sous chef. Mon Dipbong Jong was behind the bar with me. Obviously, Jaden was the owner. Who else was there at that time that was really... Andy Joy was there. Like, it was... And we'd all kind of come across from 312. And so we were this, like, young, incredibly passionate team just doing everything to get this place open. And then... Like, thinking, I think Jaden originally wanted to do it with three people on the, like, so one person behind the bar, two people on the floor. And it was just, like, wild. Because it was meant to be this casual dining experience, you know, really high turnover, like, super chill, delicious food, great wine, not fully service driven. So, yeah, and that, kind of got dictated by the general public of what to do. So, yeah, it was a wild, wild, wild time. But amazing. Definitely taught me a lot. Probably wouldn't want to do it again, but definitely taught me a lot.
Well, your CV is one of the most extraordinary in the country, but what have been the real integral moments and influences for you through your career?
I mean, I think it depends on what aspect you look at it. Like, what did I take away? So, like, that moment I spoke about with Andrew is still, you know, something as a young waiter and looking through, learning to look through somebody else's eyes and what do they want. Like, Chris Young at Jacques Raymond, I went to work at Jacques Raymond to work with Chris. Like, I still am in touch with him today. He's been a huge... guiding light for me in my career. And just, I don't know if you ever went to JR's, but it's this old mansion in Windsor, and you'd walk through the door and it was this big grand staircase and it was really intimidating. And he was like, greenie, it's scary walking in here. Like, we've got to make them feel comfortable straight away. That's our job. And that sense of effort was built on give me a warm welcome and make it feel like my home. And that has stayed with me till today. So I think it's a collection of things, like Vanessa Crichton from a leadership role at my time at the Rockpool Group. Like, you know, she's probably the most incredible manager I've ever worked with. And the biggest thing she taught me was if I'm not getting what I need out of my team, then I'm not doing my job properly. So, there's so many different ways of so many different areas of, like, what did I take away from that period of time? What has helped me along my journey from so many different people? And people I still call on now. Like, I had a question I had to ask Van, and I wanted her opinion. I was like, what do you think of this? So, yeah.
You spent some time at Attica as well, Ben Shuri's restaurant. Well, what was it like working in a restaurant that had so much international focus, but in a quiet suburb in Melbourne?
Look, I was there for a pretty amazing period of time when it was kind of on its way. I think it had just been announced 89th best restaurant in the world, when nobody knew what the 50 best restaurant list was really in this country. And then it came in the next year at like 21, like, and it was just, it was mental and it was amazing. Like, I got to travel the world with it. It was really incredible. And, like, I mean, Ben kind of did things his way. He's always done things his way. And that's kind of how I feel like I've gone on my journey. It's not been about what's popular or what to do. It's just doing them how I see them. And sometimes that hasn't always been right. And that's, you know, a decision I've had to live with. But then ultimately it's got me to where I am today, and making those wrong decisions has led me to now, which is probably where I've been the most happy, particularly with Etta. Yeah.
Do you have any dining experiences where you were on the other side, where as a guest, that sort of influenced the way that you approach hospitality?
Yes and no. Because it's definitely not how we do things here. But I was 22 and it was my first massive overseas trip. I was working at Cumulus, and I'd worked at 312 when Andoni came over from Mugaritz with when Dan had just started at the Royal Mail. And I went to Mugaritz. Andrew made me a booking and I walked in the door, and Linda, I don't actually know where Linda is now, but she was working for someone I know in the States, last I heard, at Contra. And she opened the door and spoke in Spanish. And here I was, this 22-year-old in my best possible dress for lunch, and she spoke Spanish. And I was like, I have no idea what you're saying. Like, you know, this girl off the farm kind of thing. And then she spoke in English to me straight away and just made me feel that sense of comfort, which, again, would probably be the most important thing moving forward in my career, of making people feel like that as they walk through the door. But then watching them move through the dining room, like, yes, the food was amazing, but coming from a service point, like, they had choreographers. You had like five people clearing a table of two, clearing and setting a table of two in perfect unison. So someone would clear, then someone would come through and crumb, then someone will come and set the cutlery, then someone will put the glass down. Like, it was art to watch. And that for me was amazing. It was still to this day was incredible.
Tell us about when you started to think about Etta and finding the venue and getting the momentum to open the venue.
Well, I grew up in a family business, and I think I always wanted to have my own business because of the way I was raised. My dad was in business with his two brothers. And so I was at Attica And I knew that I wanted to do it. In hindsight now, I think about it and I'm like, oh my God, even when I did open Etta, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. Like, you know, you think you know, but you have no idea. It was early days and Relay had just opened and Christian Pugliese came out with Christian Bowman and we entertained them for a week. And he just finished, obviously, at Noma, and he was talking about his and that was when, you know, Noma was at the height. Well, I mean, it's still at the height, but I don't know. Is that 15 years ago? I don't even know. Yeah, probably 15 years ago. I don't feel like I'm old enough to say that. And he was talking about how he wanted to separate himself from Noma and coming from what he had known to opening Relay and having no money and, you know, they had to do it lean and having drawers because they had all their cutlery and everything like that for the whole meal in this drawer so they could only have two people on the floor. And it was 45 people and they flipped it twice. And it was just, it was those conversations. And, like, Christian Bowman, like, you go on and Christian Bowman was his sous chef at that time. And you go and look at what those two guys have done now and it's, you know, amazing. And it was that time that I'm like, it really kind of ignited that fire in my belly to be like, I want to do this myself, but in a different way, because I'm not a chef. I mean, I would like to think I know a bit about food, but I'm never going to be that. So it had to be in an environment where, you know, I could try to control what I can control the most. And that is like the service side of things. Yeah.
How hard was it to sort of land on a venue and were there challenges at the beginning with Etta?
Like, yes. Like, what way do you look? I feel like I've made every possible mistake you can make. I mean, it was around the corner from where I lived in Barclay Street in Brunswick East, and it was for sale as a fish and chip shop. And I mean, it was going downhill. Yeah, an 82-seat fish and chip shop with a 1 a.m. license. And, I mean, in hindsight, listening to my dad and my uncle, I should have let him, you know, close and probably get it for cheaper than it was. But, I mean, in saying that, that's – I mean, I wasn't prepared to be wheeling and dealing and doing those kinds of business deals at that point in time. But, yeah, I mean – if I knew what I knew now about the space, I probably wouldn't have taken it, if that makes sense. Like, we had just the actual physicalities of it have been somewhat challenging, and we were kind of too deep into the build before we really realised. And I think that's also experience of looking at what you've got and knowing what you can do with it without having to get too many people involved. But at that point in time, we were just so far in that, you know, had to keep going, had to put some more money in, kept putting it in. So, yeah.
Well, tell us a bit about the vision when you first started, and because you've had a couple of different chefs as well and different offerings. So,
yeah, I actually opened this with a business partner and, you know, whether or not, you know, it was right in the end, you know, doing that with him got me to where I am today. So I am, you know, pretty grateful for that. But it wasn't the right fit. It just, everything was a challenge. And so getting to that point of actually saying that out loud and being like, this isn't working. And I mean, the business wasn't working at that point in time. So it really could have folded up at that point, but I was talking to my dad about it, and my constant source of guidance, my biggest supporter, he's like, do you reckon you can do it? And I'm like, yeah, I reckon I can do it. And he's like, all right, well, let's do it. Yeah, he's amazing. So that time that it was under Hayden, like, it feels like a lifetime ago. It's not the same restaurant as what it was, and we were very much appealing to the neighbourhood and didn't want to be these, you know, crazy people of coming in and charging, you know, $150 a head and, you know, trying to slot into the neighbourhood, because we wanted it to be somewhere for the neighbourhood to use as they saw fit. And, I mean, I think that is still the case today. But, I mean, there are also realities of staff costs and, you know, having to open the doors and paying for electricity. There are things like that that you have to factor in. And I think that's the thing of, like, thinking you know what you're doing, but having these grand notions of what you want. I think there was like 50 wines on the wine list at that point in time. Nothing over $100, one bottle over $100. To, you know, moving through to where we are today, where it just, it has evolved so much that I don't even think about, apart from the people who have been coming here since day dot and gone through that with me, I don't really think about that time anymore because it's just so long ago, and we're just on this path of pushing to be better every day, that it seems not like a waste of energy, but it, you know, you just don't want to look back, if that makes sense. We're looking forward.
What's been important to you in regards to the food offering there to be able to deliver the sort of hospitality that you believe in?
Look, I mean, Rasheen, if somebody told me 5 years ago that we would be serving the food that we are today, I would have laughed. But the food is the best it's ever been as well. And it's been really beautiful to watch Rasheen, like, come into her own and feel confident in cooking the way she's cooking at the moment. And when she first came on board, there was very much kind of like parameters that she had to work within. And we still very much have, you know, a menu format, but it's been when she's like, oh, what do I cook? And I'm like, well, what are you comfortable cooking? That was probably the first thing I said. And so we had, like, I think on the first menu, it was flounder with, what was it? A cider beurre blanc? Yeah, a cider butter and samphire, which now you think about that and it's so classic because she is so classically trained. Now that she's found her feet and found her, like, what she wants to cook, like, it's so far from that now, and I just kind of let her go and do her thing.
Can you give us an idea of sort of what is on the menu now that is sort of so different to, say, to 4 years ago?
Well, we still can't word it properly because it's my favourite thing on the menu. And I don't know how you word it, but essentially it's a puff rice salad. So she makes, she steams rice and puts a red curry through it, a Thai red curry through it, and then fries that rice. Then she makes a, like, Vietnamese red curry sausage, cooks it over the fire, and then there's mussels marinated, and then all these, like, delicious herbs. So it's this salad of things that's a bit spicy. There's mussels and pork in it. And I'm like, you know, if you had told me that 5 years ago, I probably would have laughed.
Has this dramatic change and evolution of Etta, has that affected your front of house offering and the wine list and those sort of operations?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, we've never really had huge, like, big-bodied reds on here anyway. But, I mean, yes, I think so. And it has to. Like, we do have, and I mean, people say we're a natural wine bar. I honestly do not think we're a natural wine bar. Like, probably, like, the furthest thing from, to be honest. But having those kind of skin-contacted or textural wines that have a bit of phenolic structure to them, I have found stands up to those little pops of chili throughout the menu. But, I mean, the thing that makes it so incredibly easy to work with her at the same time, and the team as well, it's not just Rasheen, like, it's everybody, is the food is so balanced, so it makes it a bit more easy wine-wise.
Do you have any stories of the impact that this direction has had on your customers, particularly those that have watched the evolution?
I think they're the happiest they've ever been. They're definitely Like, we just had our fifth birthday and we had a big party. And it was really, like, people were invited. And it was really, I would say, probably 70% of the people were customers from who have been coming here since day dot. And, you know, and particularly COVID as well has given them this sense of, I don't want to say ownership, but they're like, or this is their place. So they are so fiercely supportive, loyal, all of these things. And so to be there on the fifth birthday and sitting down with them, it was actually quite overwhelming for me, but they're like, we're just so happy that you're so happy. And we're so proud of you just navigating your way through this and like, look at where you are. And that is probably the thing that makes me the happiest now, is to just have all these incredible people around me. And that's like from the direction we're going, like Rasheen, she has become an incredible friend, and like confidant and ally and source of creativity, and pushes me to be better as well. And then the team that we have that just get on board with everything that we do and are like, yep, let's do it, whether it be packing 450 boxes and delivering them in the rain, or like going into a Saturday night service with five front of house staff down. And then the customers who are just like these people who have been around, like who are just like, yep, whatever, you can do whatever, just tell me and I'll be there. Like, it's that, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
You mentioned that your dad is a wonderful inspiration for what you do. And what does he think about what you've created?
Look, I think he's questioned my choices in life a couple of times. I'm not going to lie. He's questioned probably the way I have run this place a couple of times. But I mean, in saying that, I've always had his, like, he's never been, he's always been like, okay, what do you, like, his question to me is, can you do it? And do you want to do it? Because there was a moment in September 2020, where we just closed down in that part of the lockdown, where it was the first time I've ever questioned whether I want to do it or not anymore. And he's like, do you want to do it? And I really didn't know at that point. And he's like, well, if you don't, like, it's only money, it's only a place, and then there'll be something after it. And I was like, well, I can't get a job, like, you know, we were still at that point of like, can't get a job anywhere because everyone's closed and all of those kinds of things. I don't even know if I want to do this anymore, blah, 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 blah. And then people just started showing up, like customers started showing up on my doorstep at home, like dropping me over like cake and limes from their tree and wanting to like have a walk, or seeing them at the dog park and how are you going, or just calling because so many of them have my number. And I was like, this, I can't not, like, I love this place. And so from that moment on, I think my mindset changed in Etta, and I didn't really think about it in, because I think at that point I felt suffocated by the business. And from that point I chose to be here, not that I didn't feel like I had to be here. I wanted to be here. And then from that point in time, I just feel like everything has changed, and yeah, for the better. It's just everything here is beautiful. The team are beautiful. The food is beautiful. The restaurant's becoming more beautiful. The people are beautiful. Like, it's just, yeah, it's nice.
You've got Etta into a great place with the team and also with the community, and going in a real direction, which is giving you amazing positive energy. What do you love about what you're doing?
The people. Like, I think that more than anything is the thing. Like, hospitality is the name of the game, and I think sometimes we can get lost in it. And you strip it right back to what it is. It's, you know, you've either got it in you or not. I think that's the thing. It's a part of you or it's not a part of you. And I mean, it's like eating beautiful food and drinking amazing wine in nice rooms. Like, it's a very, particularly with everything going on in the world at the moment, like it is a, it's a complete luxury in life, but it is those moments where, like, you don't know what has happened in someone's day, and like when they walk through the door, or they'll just show up and they're just, you can't, like, at the moment we're so busy that, you know, you've got to pull a rabbit out of a hat for a seat or something like that, because this is their place. Like, this is their place when they're having a hard time to come. When even just Mother's Day gone, like, I had to chat to the, well, I didn't have to, we had the chat at briefing before service, and I'm like, Mother's Day is really hard for some people. Like, we don't know everybody's situation. We don't know what their family lives are like. They might have to be here. There's generally a lot of tension. Like, we're the place that people are coming to because they feel safe here. And that is probably, yeah, the thing that makes me the happiest. And even, like, from a staff point of view, like, there is, I think last week one of the chefs, he did a massive week, and I'm like, I'm so sorry, that won't happen again. I looked at your hours at the end of the week and I'm like, that is not where we want them to be. And he's like, no, it's actually really nice because, you know, things are hard for me at home at the moment and it's nice being here. Like, they're those moments that I'm like, yeah, I'm really happy with what we have here.
Well, Hannah, it's extraordinary what you've built there, and it's an absolute honour to have you on Deep in the Weeds today to hear just a bit of your story. Please keep in touch, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector.
Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen.
Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au.
Stay safe and be well.